This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, this is Graham. Welcome to a classic big interview. This time, we go back to season 16-17. This is what I had to say about it back then.
Okay, before part one with Hits, I already mentioned that we first got chatting when I was writing my Spain book a few years ago. What stood out to me was that Thomas provided brilliant first-hand insights into what it was like to face that all-conquering Spanish team for Germany at Euro 2008 when the adventure was just beginning. He didn't just list memories. He'd obviously thought a great deal about the Spanish players during the game and afterwards too. And indeed, it struck me that although the German players could have been mad at the way in which the Spaniards celebrated through the mix zone, made it look as if they were triumphalist, not just triumphant, Hitz had a different view about the people he met for Spain that day, and he struck me as a thinker. We touch on that subject again. We talk about his take on Das Reboot, as Rafa Honigstein famously called it, and Klinsmann-inspired revolution from 2006, which, with the help of Sammer and the German Bundesliga, took their football back to the top of the world in 2014. Thomas's social conscience has been fundamental to much of what he's set out to accomplish in his life, and we talk about both his campaigning work against racism and anti-Semitism, and naturally, although football was the bigger part of the chat we wanted to have, he also talks a little bit about his decision in 2014 to come out as gay. I loved this hour and 20 minutes that we had with Thomas in London. I hope this part two brings you enjoyment and satisfaction and tells you a story about a very, very impressive, interesting football man.
When we first talked, it was about 2008. And I now, listening to you, I now reflect still more strongly about what a weird group of Spanish players I encountered then, because they were in this sort of giant ski lodge at the end of a valley near Innsbruck, and just by chance, because the Spanish don't necessarily have fully German-style organisation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Juan Capdevila gets given this key to room 23. Mm-hmm. And it's a gigantic room. Yeah. There's three bedrooms in it. There's a salon. And everybody's like, well, you've got Dabowski's room. And he's like, no, this is my room. Yeah. And it goes well. And they all go and meet and party there at night. And Reina and Arbeloa and somebody else steal food from the kitchen like little schoolboys would do, which I guess you would say is probably quite a good thing to be doing.
It is indeed.
So then Capdevila finds out the room's haunted and there's a ghost. Or at least he thinks there is, because something's creaking in the night. He calls Santi Casola and says, will you come and move into the room with me? And he does. And but every night, everybody gets there together and does their little sweepstakes. And they did the exact opposite of what you've described there, and that they knew exactly what to do with their time. Mm-hmm. They stuck up for each other, they teased each other, they played music. Okay, they did play snooker or ping pong or these various different card games, but you would say that that type of spirit and that fun, natural fun in each other's company is a little bit rare.
Yeah, it is, and you get to realise it when things are not going well. And I just described what it's like with the national team, the German national team, and they've played ever so well for the last 10, 15 years, I would say. But I've also been part of teams where it didn't go well, and it kind of all falls apart. You know, players don't talk to each other. Managers, of course, they take players out, put players in. You don't know who you can trust. It's really, really difficult. I don't know how it starts, and that's obviously the big question for a manager. You know, how do you stop it when it actually happens, or how do you prevent it in the first place? So I can talk about a title-winning team with Stuttgart, that we were friends, but it's always a chicken-egg question. What was there first, the good atmosphere or the good performances? Because it's easy when you win five games in a row, you think, oh, I love this, you know. Training is much easier. The guys are fun. You know, this guy actually, he's not as bad as I thought he was. But when he's not playing well, I think I don't like him. And that's what you have to create. You know, that's a big question for the manager and the club or the national team, the people that look after the players. Okay, how do we get the best out of the players? Back in the days, 20, 30 years ago, you had to punish players. You'd say, okay, if you don't win, you're not going to get a bonus, or you get extra training. Nowadays, I think the younger generation, of course, you have to explain to them why do you do certain things. They need to understand why they go to training and do certain exercises. What does it mean to win trophies for you personally? Like, what does football mean to you? Okay, if you're successful, how does that change you? If you're not successful, how do you deal with that lack of winning? I mean, of course, you all know you have psychologists now, sports psychologists as part of the group, the teams in various leagues, of course. And I think it's important. Players need to talk. Sometimes they don't trust the manager, so you need somebody else who's kind of outside of it a little bit and find people that you trust, and that's part of the game nowadays.
You've always been driven by not only ambition and a knowledge of your talent, but a certainty about where you wanted to get to. So is it fair to deduce from what you've told me that you're one of these players who hasn't throughout his career needed that kind of psychological help or a conviction, or were there moments?
Well, the thing is, you know, I said I want to become a professional football player, and suddenly I'm there. You know, I'm playing in the Premier League. So I've achieved my goal. What's next? How far do you want to go? And of course you'd say, you know, I want to play for the national team. I've managed that. But then what's next? And then you have dips in form, and you think, how do I deal with that? I still think I'm the same player. I play as well as before, but the manager just drops me to the bench. And of course you start looking for people who can give you a really good assessment of your performance and how they see you, because, you know, often players think, I'm the best player in the team. Why am I not playing? And agents tell their players they are brilliant.
You've said something rare there, because players who aren't in the team, they don't go asking people about where they're going wrong. They go, he's an idiot. You have said something rare there.
Yeah, well, I have questioned myself, and I'm not the only one, of course not. But the majority of the players, of course, they look for confirmation through the managers, their agents, and they tell them, oh, do you want to talk to the manager? Should I? And that's how it all starts. But I think you've got to be true to yourself and say, how can I improve? Why? And then do you ask the manager, or you just say, okay, I don't talk to him and I just show him in training? It doesn't always work like that. And then you need somebody. Is it your agent? Is it, you know, your partner that you talk to? Is it a psychologist? Is it a somebody else from the family, your father, your mother? Whoever it is, you have to find that person or that group of people who are honest to you. If you're not honest to yourself, and tell you the truth, tell you how to move on from that, you know, being on the bench or not even in the squad, what to do next. That's where you need to find the people that you can trust.
It's funny you described the German setup in that way, because when we talked about Euro 2008, I know that there were, although it was a barnstorming way, you very nearly won the European Championship. And although you've won important things, that was about to be an extraordinary experience. And that wasn't the most united German squad there. There was a lot of disharmony. But you won the quarterfinal in barnstorming style, 3-2, which speaks about a unified group working brilliantly together. You did, and history's beautiful, because, you know, the guy in that year behind you in the Bayern Munich training ground, you give the pass to him, Lahm scores, you're through in the final, you've beaten Turkey in an extraordinary game. What was going wrong at that time?
It's interesting you mentioned that, because I think that was about the only time when I was part of the team that wasn't really a team and still, or when I say performed, got the right results.
Yeah.
And you think, okay, we're disjointed. As you said, you could tell we didn't start well into the tournament. We lost to Croatia, I think. Beat Poland in the opening game, lost to Croatia in the second game, and I think we just beat Austria 1-0. You just had the sense, like, you know, we're in the next round, but we haven't really played that well. How did it happen? And then, as you said, you know, played well against Portugal and Turkey. Suddenly we're in the final, thinking, well, we didn't play that well, but we were in the final. And I believed we're Germany. You know, we just really good at tournaments, but we just couldn't fool the Spanish. They were too good. That was the problem. They were just way too good. And they just didn't believe in that. The Germans, you know, when they go to a tournament, they always win, which was a shame. I would have liked to win the Euros. But they were just too good. And then, obviously, after the game, it was so obvious to see this team is not a team. They haven't worked together. There's a group of a lot of good individuals, but those extra 5 or 10% they can get out of a group if they really work together. We didn't have that, and that's one reason why we lost. Well, the second, of course, because of the Spanish, they were the best. You know, they simply were. But we came close. Well, we only lost 1-0, but it was disappointing. And as you said, I didn't go back thinking, oh, this was like the best group I've been in and we should have won, and for whatever reason we didn't. It's just we lost because Spanish were better and we weren't the group we should have been.
The guy who saw the weather changing in my world was Iker Casillas, because before the semi-final in Durban in 2010, I had a nice interview with him, and I asked him a fairly straightforward question about... He said, the Germans are coming. He said, they're building a generation to dominate Europe for a long, long time. He said, the game tomorrow, he said, we're good, we might win it. But he said, bad weather ahead. Uh-huh. And he was sure, and he was clear. And a guy we've got respect for, Ralf Honigstein, encapsulated it in a phrase, das Reboot.
Yeah.
Very clever. Uh-huh. Talented bastard. What does das Reboot mean to you, and how did it happen? Did Germany need to change a great deal?
I think it started with Jürgen Klinsmann. He was brave enough to take everything apart in the FA, German FA, and say we need a new philosophy, a new way going forward. We need to bring in young players. We've got to seriously think about how we approach this. If you want to win trophies, we have to work harder. Up until then, I think, from what I've heard, I wasn't part of the regime before Jürgen Klinsmann and the ones before it before, that they would often just go through the motions, you know, that they wouldn't work hard in training, because they said, well, you do your hard work at the club. When you come to the national team, it's like, you come here to enjoy it. You know, you have like a 45-minute training session, and then afterwards, just have a good time and relax. Jürgen Klinsmann said, you come to the national team, and I want to make you fitter. I want you to have a goal and talk about how we're going to achieve this goal. So this was a totally different approach. Not everybody liked it. But he got rid of some of the people in the FA that he thought would stand in the way of that new way going forward, which was very controversial. Mm. He had to take a lot in. He took all that criticism, and I think he was brave enough to change that. He didn't get all the glory. Joachim Löw did later, but I would say Jürgen Klinsmann deserves a lot of credit for changing the perception and changing the way the German national team is working as a group. You know, we did fitness tests, which was unheard of before. Players hated it. And they're like, why do we fitness test? He said, we want to control where you stand. Okay, first thing, you do fitness test. Next year, I want you to improve on your speed, on your endurance, agility, whatever we did there. And players don't like to be controlled that way. And that's what you have to change. And of course, bringing in younger players, they grew up that way, it makes it easier. If you deal with a 32-year-old, who up until that point has never done a fitness test with a national team, you say, why am I going to do that now? You're not telling me that. It's quite difficult. But if you have a 19, 20-year-old who's been brought up that way, it's a little bit easier. And they're all talented young guys. And as you just mentioned, the book, Rafa describes it, the academies, the way they've changed. That's, I think, it took a few years to bring in these young players, gifted players, and also tell them they have to work hard for their success, and they were willing to do that.
You've touched on something the Spanish did, because in this country, the Klinsmann figure who takes on the FA Blazers doesn't exist. It can't happen, we're always told. In England, where we are now, where we're speaking. And a shock in England when the Spanish FA says, well, when we see talented 14-year-olds, we go and spot them wherever they are. We spot them. We don't wait for the clubs to supply them. And we say to the clubs, and we oblige the clubs, that these 15-year-olds come and train at our centre 3 days a week for 3 months when they're 15. And we use our own unpaid scouts to find them, and we begin to educate them about the Spain way. Then they go back to their clubs,
yeah.
And they make friendships. There's an echo of what you said about that at seven. You don't know that Bayern Munich are the enemies, even though you're an 1860 fan, because you haven't gone through. So Iker and Xavi can be friends, even though one's a Barcelona fan and one's a Madridista, because they're young, yeah. They haven't fought, they haven't clashed, and therefore hands across the barricade. It's super. And you know, you've described something in Germany where You said that the players maybe don't like a national team saying a fitness test, but the clubs won't like that either.
Yeah.
Clubs must have been just as difficult to bring on side.
Absolutely. So what happened was Jürgen Klinsmann, he said, this is what we do here at the national team, and I will encourage you to do exactly the same, not the testing, but the extra training at the club. So suddenly, the fitness coaches at the club say, why do you tell us what to do? Me as a player, I would go to a club and say, here's a, you know, some of the exercises the national team want me to do. And they say, well, we've got our own fitness coach. You know, we know how to deal with you. So that was the controversy in the first year or so. So it, like I said, this is another thing that Jürgen Klinsmann was willing to do to fight with the clubs. He knew that this would happen. But he said, well, if we've got the World Cup at home. If you want to be successful, these guys have to work a lot harder. They're not at the same level as some of the other teams. So obviously you've done something wrong in the past. This is my way. You've got to take it. And that was pretty tough because they said, why is the national team so important now? But of course, a lot of people realized we all want to have a great World Cup in our own country. It took a long time and a lot of conversations between the national team and the clubs that eventually they would all work together. And as far as I can judge now, it does go hand in hand. So the clubs have become better. The national team have become really good and they will benefit from it.
And the people who count a great deal, who aren't talked about a lot, fans benefit from it because I presume that there was a pretty big celebration for finishing third, winning that playoff against Portugal in 2006. Can you compare it to the 250,000 people that hit the streets in Stuttgart? Are those memories like, and to what degree does it give you satisfaction for the hours of effort? And does it stay with you, or does the trophy lift stay with you, or the friendships, or the goals?
Well, the experience, you know, going there before the game, the day before the game, we were in the hotel, and there's like, I don't know, 10, 15,000 outside, maybe not that many, but it was an awful lot of people standing, you know, on the street, celebrating, and they wanted to see the team, and it was just incredible. The 4 weeks in Germany, that time, was just unreal. You know, we couldn't expect that. We played well. The fans carried us through. Unfortunately, only until the semi-final because Italy, they're quite clever. But it's the memory. For me personally, I've only played, I think, 10 minutes altogether. A bit disappointing. I'm happy to have been part of it. But for me, it was more a motivation to say, well, I've trained with the best players in the country for 4 or 5 weeks or even longer, including the pre-season for the World Cup. Just go to your club and make use of it. You know, you're fitter than ever. Now you go to your club and just you show your club manager, I'm ready for the new season. Just use me. Although it started terribly, as I described earlier. I was still fit, you know, and then eventually paid off that following season. We won the title with Stuttgart, and I think a reason was because I was fit. You know,
there might be a correlation between the two experiences.
I believe so, yeah, because also the mentality, so the basis is there, the fitness. I had the disappointment of not playing in the World Cup, only playing very little. I said, I want more. You know, I've had a sniff of it. I was part of the World Cup squad. Now I want to prove it to the club that, you know, my place in the squad is justified. So that was the motivation. And I just stayed part of the national team squad for, I don't know, another 4 years.
If I'm not wrong, in 2007, around 2007, you begin to... can't describe it as taking a risk at all, but it fits with your characters. You've described it. You begin to write about racism.
Yeah.
You've said in the past, we haven't spoken about it, that when you were in trial at Celtic, you saw a black player being badly abused. Yeah. You've spoken about teammates and their partners being abused. And you began to write about that then, and subsequently, I think you spoke or wrote about anti-Semitism. What drove that need to start to communicate and guide people that they were doing the wrong thing?
Well, of course, too, that I've realised how popular again football has become, and you know, as all the fans stand there and you get recognised in the streets, not only in Stuttgart where I played, but almost everywhere in Germany, people's like, you know, you're a national team player, and the effect that you have as a football player, especially on young kids. And I thought, well, of course, make use of it, you know, for a good cause, and that's my conviction, my belief that this is a good course. I've benefited from it. I've played abroad and I've never really been abused. There was some stick, of course, being German and playing in England, but that was more the banter. That was the
fair
banter.
That's
exactly.
Fair, yeah.
Oh, it's fair, that's what you say. Yeah, I had to learn the banter. But of course, there was some prejudice at the beginning. I thought, wow.
Genuinely thought, okay, I'll stop joking.
Yeah. No, I mean, that was my experience.
I thought it was always robust fun. I thought we got over that, really, to be honest.
You know, we talk about 2016 years ago. And there were some players that honestly believed, you know, I listen to Rammstein and I eat sausages and drink beer. only, and players approach me with that and said, no, this is wrong, you know. Yeah, I like some German music, but not only. So I grew up with hip-hop music. It's like, really? You're white German. Why do you listen to hip-hop?
Fantastische Vier, for example.
Yeah, also, yeah, yeah. A little bit of Fantastische Vier. I tried to introduce them to German hip-hop. That didn't quite work out, but that's another story. So there was some prejudice, and I was surprised to see that.
Prejudiced in terms of antipathy.
Yeah.
That because you were this typical Bavarian German, that wasn't a good thing. That was a bad thing,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it was indeed. And you just mentioned it. My experience when I was at Celtic for a week on trial, we played in Germany. And this guy, you know, a teammate of mine, a black guy, he was racially abused. And I thought, what is going on here?
By whom? By German fans?
By German fans, yeah. Mm. And I thought, oof, that was sort of the first experience. And then, like I said, being a foreigner yourself, it just makes you aware of what's going on and the privilege of being abroad and not having any problems as such. But of course, I had experiences then with racism. We talked about it. You have players from all over the world and you know, you just share your stories. And I just felt there's a big responsibility there. If I want to make use of the status that I have as a German international, I want to use it for a good cause. And that was my impression, you know, start with a blog. I mean, I was approached by a German newspaper, Die Zeit. They said they start this blog and they want to have me there because I've lived abroad and maybe I can share some stories. I can talk to teammates and I did so. And I thought that was a very good thing to do.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
When you take your own decision to come out, has this experience of how people receive a high-profile footballer saying things or doing things that they're not ready for, did that experience give you guidance about how to say it, when to say it, what might happen?
Well, of course, you know the effect. You know what's going to happen if you talk about something else rather than football. Other people jump on it. You know, racism, anti-Semitism, it's political. So suddenly you have new people that engage with you that say, you shouldn't be doing this. Other people say, that's great. You know, you're a footballer and that footballers should start foundations, charities and do other good things. Mm. And that's just one of them. So that was nice to experience. But at the same time, you go on another territory we're not so familiar with, and suddenly you have to exchange arguments with people that you don't know about something that you can talk about from experience, but don't have all the reasons to come up with anything. Oh, hold on a second, this is something new. But it's, again, I have no regrets, and this was a really good thing to do in terms of the coming out. By that time, I've had so much experience with reactions from other people that it was a little bit easier to deal with.
When you decided to come out, the manner in which you communicated, the manner in which you handled the pressure in the media was was stunning. It was elegant to watch. It was really reaffirming to watch. It was just so calm and communicative that I thought even the process, rather than what you were saying, mm-hmm. would have given a lot of people, if I ever want to make that decision, I feel comfortable that it can be handled in that way. Yeah. I presume that was strategic.
Well, of course, yeah. I mean, you know, I've been in the business long enough, in the football business, and being, yeah, sort of famous, that you know how to do certain things. Of course, I had no comparison, you know, to look at some other players. How did they come out? But yeah, I knew people who I thought could help me, assist me in that way, ask questions. Okay, this is what I want to do. How am I going to do it? So the people that supported me, they were brilliant. Yeah, I'm quite happy the way it went.
Is there any way to assess whether their gentle ripples have gone positively for people either in Germany or in football? Or has it kind of just been, which is also a positive, people have just got on with it and said, well, what the heck? But you did speak about wanting, you'd seen other athletes do the same thing and felt that it was positive. Uh-huh. Can you make any judgment yet, a couple of years on, whether there's been positive ripples out to other people who've said, no, thank you, that's useful?
From my own experience, yes, I go to football grounds and people are not saying a bad word. You know, they talk about football. People in the street, they say, oh, you're that... And you kind of don't know what's coming now. It's like they always say, oh, you're that footballer.
You're that guy with that magical lift.
Yeah, exactly. They always talk about football, and you know, and that's my experience. Yes, people are aware of it. Don't talk about it too much. Have we moved on? Have you made improvements? I think so, because I can only talk about the people that write to me, people that talk to me. There's a woman yesterday that approached me at the ground, and she said, you know, thank you for what you've done to football and also outside of football. And of course, I took that as a compliment, and I have that from time to time. And I think, yes, it has made a difference. And I think everybody helps by coming out, and I would never want to push anybody. That's always been my view. If you're comfortable in your own skin, if mm-hmm. you think the time's right, then do it. But it's never been my intention to encourage others to do it and say, now people have to come out. No, it's a very personal decision. But a few years later now, I know that people have changed their views. Some of them have. I've received so many emails, people saying, thank you for what you've done. I'm more accepted now. Now you've helped me to be brave enough to come out to my parents, my friends, whatever. So every little one that I could help, you know, is positive.
That's really what I'm asking, because never having had to make decisions of such import that I can remember in my life, just thinking that, listening to you explain that, it must be a very powerful emotion to say, well, not only did I do the right thing for me and I handled it well, but there are benefits for others. That's a very big thing to be able to say in any area of life.
Of course, yeah. And I know we're coming back to being a role model as a football player. And the first experience I had was with the blog about racism and anti-Semitism. I got a feel for it. Mm. And this is just another topic where we talk about football and acceptance in life, in general life, football fans and everything, how people being treated, minorities. It's powerful. And I'm glad that I've done it. And let's just hope that it becomes better and better.
Couldn't agree more. Before we let you go, because we will, the guy who's suffering the prejudice now, that was Bavarian, is now anti-Catalan. But I feel I'm talking to a fellow fan. A certain Pep Guardiola is coming to Manchester City. I remember you telling me at one stage you were going down to see Xabi Alonso to work out bits about him and his experience in Munich at what wasn't your club that you supported, but it's where you began. Analytically, as a fan, as a lover of football, as an intelligent man, what have you thought about what Pep's done for German football, for the Bundesliga, for the media, rather than simply what he's done for Bayern? I know it's a big, big question I'm asking. What do you take from Pep in Germany?
Yeah, I think we need another hour to discuss Pep.
Don't be raising concepts like that, otherwise I'll take that other hour.
I love football, and that's why I love Pep, you know, what he's done to German football. But of course, you've got to differentiate between him as a manager, as a football coach, and him as a person, because what he's done for Bayern was just phenomenal. I know fans are critical of him because he's not won the Champions League in 3 years, but the way he's changed the team, some of the games were just phenomenal to watch, because at some point in the season, last season with Bayern, teams would not even go and try to beat Bayern. They would play with two banks of five, you know, just defend because they just feared losing 5-6-7-0. And that's quite some achievement. And what he's done is even break down these defences. I mean, sometimes the German national team, when they play against smaller teams, they experience something similar. And they find it very difficult to get through these, you know, two banks of five. Pep has managed that. You know, he's changed. So he arrived and everyone was talking about tiki-taka in the first season. Then they lost to Real Madrid in the semi-final of the Champions League. So German fans are, we're fed up with tiki-taka. He's got to change something. So they brought in wingers. And Robin Ribery, of course, were there. And then Costa came in the third season, I think it was, and Coman. And to make use of these white players, that was different. Changing formations throughout the game 3-4 times, that was new. Playing players out of position, Philipp Lahm moving him into midfield, Alaba as a centre-half where he was a fullback most of his career up until that point. Everything worked out. His teams dominated the majority of the games that I've watched. You know, him being animated, giving his players information, and they just become better players. Jerome Boateng has become one of the best centre-halves in the world. That's what he's done.
His passing's improved, hasn't it?
It has improved, of course. He's done so many good things for German football, for Bayern Munich. And that's why I think it's unfair to say he's not fulfilled the dream of the Bayern fan. Well, that's not unfair because that's what their dreams. But he has improved so much. He has made German fans talk about tactics. You know, now we're a nation that talks about tactics. Up until that point, we wanted to win trophies, you know, play good football, but most of all, win trophies. And now we talk about 3-5-2. We talk about only two centre-halves starting to play, like he did against Juventus in his last season in the Champions League in the first leg. I mean, that's really impressive.
This blows my mind, and this is why I know we're not going to get another hour, but I hear the passion and the pace of your delivery, and the light bulbs are going off my top. Let's leave what is and isn't failure. But in the presentation, when they sign him, at a time when Heinkes' players have responded to the fact that he's going and Pep's coming in a way that City's players haven't managed this season, they win the treble. The two guys who were in charge of the club when you said, listen, I'm off to Birmingham, Hennes and Rummenigge, with Sammer, say, I'll tell you what we'd like not to be. We'd like not to be FC Hollywood anymore. We'd like not to win a trophy and then fall asleep in the league next year. And he did that. They said as well, we'd like to revolutionise how people look at our football. They wanted in that presentation on his first day the excitement that I've just heard in your voice about the way in which Bayern can fascinate and draw you in and play more intelligently. And I'd take a little jump and shoot me down if I'm wrong, but you drew a little correlation between what you saw and what you learned in 2006 under Klinsmann and Joachim Löw and what you were able to bring to Armin Wey and the title season at Stuttgart. There must have been some correlation, it's my argument, between what the Bayern Munich players learned under Pep in the first season, what the rest of the Bundesliga saw Bayern Munich doing, and just that little extra element in 2014 when the German national team managed to win the World Cup. Has he had some small grain of effect in that?
Yes, certainly. And what's interesting is that players like Philipp Lahm, for example, I mean, it was after the first season that Pep was there that Germany won the World Cup. That even Philipp Lahm, you know, it's quite difficult to teach him something. He's seen everything. You know, he's won almost everything.
Yes.
But he even admits that Pep Guardiola has taught him something new in football. And that's what I mean. And Pep brings that obsession with football. Before him, you know, you talk about managers who, of course, care about the game, care about the team and the club. But I think he brought that obsession, that 24/7 thinking about football that puts people off, you know, and understand that because he avoids any question around the football. You know, all he wants to talk about is football.
Yeah.
But if you're part of a big club like Bayern Munich, you're not just a football manager, you're representing a club. Yeah. The fans want to engage with you. The fans want to see you sometimes, you're invited by fan clubs and they just want to get to know you as a person. And he never opened up to the fans. And that's the only point of criticism, that he hasn't really won over the fans. He said he arrived and Germany was pretty decent. After 3 years, it hasn't improved. And I think those are the signs that you think he said that he enjoys being in Munich. He likes German football, but his actions are different. A man like him, who's so intelligent, who's travelled the world, and I know German is not an easy language, you would expect him to improve his German.
Yes.
And he would not do one-on-one interviews with journalists. And of course, people don't like that in Germany. So whenever he lost, you know, when he lost to Real Madrid in the Champions League the year after against Barcelona, they had something to criticise him. I think you can hardly criticise him the way his team is playing. The only thing you can criticise as well, you know, it's a project. he treated Bayern as a project, and they're proud Bavarians. It's a huge club, and if you go there and the club asks you, I don't know if they've done it before, the club asks you, do you want to stay with our great club again? He says, no, thank you, I'm going to Manchester City. I always wanted to be their manager. People don't like that. People just don't like that. And that's why he's never become a club legend, for once, because he's not won the Champions League, which I think is a bit unfair, because Champions League, you know, that level, there's some other great teams, you can always lose to them, especially the Spanish. He hasn't engaged with the fans, and that's really sad, and I wish he had done that, but obviously that's him. But as a football manager, I think there's no better manager in the world.
But you've made a journey in different circumstances, but for similar reasons that he's about to make. You saw a different horizon. You wanted to test yourself. You wanted to take a risk. You're coming to a new culture and a new language. Is there a risk of these small flaws that you've microscoped repeating at Manchester City in England, given your clear knowledge of the British football culture, or not?
Well, it's different in England, of course, the way the fans, I mean, first of all, I think the fans have accepted that they're not very close to the team. You know, they can't watch training. In Germany, you can watch the training. In England, you can't. So all they expect is success. He can probably buy the players, bring them in, the players that he wants. He's an excellent manager. Premier League's different. I'm curious of what he's going to do. I've had a bet with someone recently and I said, yeah, Man City is going to win the Premier League in the first season. I just think that he's that good. I don't think you can ever say one team is winning the Champions League. That's, for me, it's so hard to foresee and say, because it's kind of going up and down. But you can almost guarantee winning the league, because if you have the best squad and a manager like him, I think, yeah, he's going to win the league. That's my assumption, but it's going to be tough how he's going to deal with it. He speaks the language better than German, so that's an advantage, of course. He's got his mates there already at Man City. I think they're going to deal with it. It's slightly different. It's all set up for him already. When he arrived at Bayern, he's had all the success with Barcelona. He took a year off. The whole drama around him is so hard, and then your pint just want to treble with Bayern. To arrive at such a big club now after winning the treble, and with all the thing around him, he's lived in New York, he's met all the famous people in the world, and suddenly he's at Bayern. And they were so proud, and that's where I thought, oh, he must win the Champions League for us. You know, there's no other way. We have one of the best squads in the world, now we have the best manager. It's inevitable that we win the Champions League, and it hasn't happened. So people are disappointed. And now, he's not won the Champions League for 3 years in a row. Man City, he arrives, and the expectations may not be as high as they were when you arrived at Bayern.
The ground is more fertile.
A little bit, yeah.
It makes total sense. Doing these interviews is more of a privilege than you know, more of a privilege than I've been able to express. The poor fools have to listen to this every couple of weeks, hear my puppy-like enthusiasm about the people we speak to. But it's very, very, very rare in this long series of interviews that have given the three of us more enjoyment than at any time in our professional career that I say, I wish we weren't stopping. But I did promise you that with Swiss watch timing, because
that's right.
I'm quite handy at opening up Swiss watches, that we'll stop. But two things, please. At some stage in the future of this interview, even if we have to leave it for a little while, could we do this again?
Yeah, I'd love to.
Thank you. Then that's all I want to know.
It's a great pleasure.
An enormous pleasure, a real education. You're a man that we all admire, super footballer, and it's been what football should be, a joy.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.